authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers. Welcome, word pushers, word nudgers, word chiselers, word propellers, word igniters, and word lovers to another episode of Right Minded. I'm Grant Faulkner, and I'm here today with my word-minded co-host, Brooke Warner of She Writes, and we're in the midst of our nano prep series. Well, how's it going, Brooke? Do you feel as if you have enough nano prep advice to write a novel now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited because actually our guest today, Chris Beatty, gave me a novel idea and it starts with the burning of a tiki bar. So I think I might take on that challenge, you know, but I'll maybe have to save it for next year. Luckily, this year I have the book that I am writing in hand. It is not a novel, as I've been saying. It's a book about publishing. I think if I were writing a novel, I would probably be entering with a bit of trepidation. But the fact is that the advice that we've been getting in this nano prep series, and that is going to continue to come in the weeks leading up to November, is inspiring me so much, even though I'm not writing a novel. And that's what I love about this. I think we have like genre irrelevant advice coming from all of these different people that we're interviewing. And that's been really fun.
Well, just so our listeners know, we kicked off a bit of nano prep with last week's episode with Mary Robinette Cowell. And today's episodes and all of the episodes in the month of October are going to be a continuation of this theme of nano preparation. And with that, we're playing with the show flow a bit. I will give a pep talk and Brooke will give a green light moment, and then we'll leave the show with a writing action. And in order to take the best advantage of the wisdom of our guests, we're dedicating most of the show to their novel writing advice. And then we're going to end the show with a nano prep action. So you can have a little bit of homework throughout the month of October to just kind of keep feeling out your novel and find out what you're going to write and how to do it. And so we're still new at this, so this is probably not the last time we'll experiment with our content and presentation, right, Brooke?
Yeah, and I am a flexible person, so I like trying new stuff, and I hope we'll get more feedback as we continue from our listeners about what they like, what they'd like to hear more of, ideas they might have. And so, yeah, for this month, I'm loving the nano prep orientation because I'm getting myself geared up to throw down a whole lot of content in November.
I like that. I like that as a tagline for NaNoWriMo, throw down a whole lot of content. Well, one of the valuable lessons I take from Chris Beatty is that he dove into writing a novel way back in 1999 when he founded NaNoWriMo. He didn't like worry about taking writing workshops or reading a lot of how to write books. He was just a passionate reader and he wanted to write a novel. So he plunged in with the idea that the best way to learn to write a novel is to write one, and to write one with friends, by the way. And I completely agree with that. And I often think of this Jerry Seinfeld quote. He said, "The less you know about the field, the better your odds. Dumb boldness is the best way to approach a new challenge." Now, I know that sounds a little weird, like it's hard to grasp or to embrace the phrase dumb boldness as a life strategy or a creative strategy. But what do you think about the benefits of dumb boldness, Brooke?
Initially, I think it's great. And after talking to Chris today, I think I totally get the whole nano philosophy in such a more deep, ingrained way. Like, it is about that dumb boldness. And part of what you get to do when you embrace the dumb boldness is let go of the inner critic. And I think a lot of people need that. And we all have to start somewhere. Tina Fey has this other quote that it says, "You can't be that kid standing at the top of the water slide overthinking it. You have to go down the chute." And to me, this says it all, because part of becoming a writer has to do with joining, having a community. A lot of aspiring writers feel really isolated. And so there's just this old truism, right? Just go for it, which is what Tina Fey is speaking to. And Annie Lamott is famous for encouraging writers to write that shitty first draft. And all of this speaks to that same general thing that Nano promotes, which is just to dive in. And then later, of course, you have to do the opposite of that, which is revision. And we can dedicate some episodes to that at a later point. But the more you write, the more you learn the craft. The more you write, the more you know what you don't know. And then you seek out additional support. So I'm, you know, I like that counterintuitiveness and going with the dumb boldness.
Yeah. And I think one thing that was really valuable about talking with Chris is that he gave us the reminder that sometimes it's fine, or it is fine, just to write a novel for the sake of writing it. You don't even have to think about revision or publishing it. It can just be a wonderful creative act that you do to make your life more meaningful. But I think there's a lot to be learned from improvisational actors. And in some ways, I think about NaNoWriMo as being its own sort of improv event. The number one principle of improv acting is to say yes and. And so what this means is that when you're on stage with your fellow actors, no matter what they do, no matter how crazy it is, you have to go with it. You have to receive it and then kind of build on it and riff on it and just see what happens. So you don't know the story. In other words, you're finding and creating the story at exactly the same time and just going with it. And here's the thing. I think a lot of us don't trust that we have these story ideas in us, but the cauldron of our mind is full of story ideas. We just have to open the door and let them out. And that's what I think NaNoWriMo does for so many people.
Yeah, so true. And it reminds me of that story game that I used to play at camp. Probably a lot of people have played this in different capacities, church or team building exercise, where there's like an opening line to a story and each person takes a turn building off of it until the story is complete and the whole thing is read out loud. And so if you guys have ever done this, or Grant, if you have, they're hilarious. And if you haven't, try it. And it can be a good thing to do with friends. Actually, I want to try it at my next family reunion as I was thinking about this. But it's a good creative exercise because it helps you to let go of control, right? Like other people have to take the story and it goes in surprising directions. And if you go around a second round, you have to exercise your creative muscles because you kind of have to adjust and be like, oh, okay, the story definitely was not going how I was planning for it to go. But I just like this because I think it really speaks to the improvisation that you were just saying, and it brought back some good camp memories too.
Yeah. Now I'm imagining a podcast that we do at a later date where we invite a lot of guests on, and that's what we do. We just do that game the whole time. It'd be really fun. I don't know if our listeners would like it, but hopefully they would. But yeah, NaNoWriMo is a type of camp with writing games, I think. I think the game you did is actually a version of An Exquisite Corpse, which is a Dada writing exercise, and it is largely about tapping into your unconscious and opening yourself up to surprise and not controlling things. So I think that any exercise that helps you let go of control is crucial to NaNoWriMo success. And so I can't resist peppering our conversation with one more quote. This is our like writing quote episode. But this is like my single favorite bit of NaNoWriMo advice. And it comes from Ray Bradbury. He says, you've got to jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down. Like sometimes you just have to take that leap of faith and trust that it's all going to work out and that you can sprout wings.
Well, this might be the writing quote episode, but I think you're also kind of the writing quote guy. You know, you're full of writing quotes and your book is too. And so I love that. And I also love that Ray Bradbury is already getting a lot of play on this show because talk about creative inspiration.
Yeah, I definitely like writing quotes. In fact, I have a whole Google Doc full of them, and I think it's like 50 pages long at this point. So I need a librarian to help me with that. But, you know, I like this quote because, you know, again, like NaNoWriMo, take that leap of faith, believe in yourself, and grow wings on the way down. And I promise your novel will be, you'll have fun flying with it.
And with that, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to say yes and to the wisdom of Chris Beatty and start growing those novel writing wings.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm super excited to welcome our next guest because he's been a friend of mine for years, and I think he's one of the most inspirational people on the planet. To many of our listeners, Chris Beatty doesn't need an introduction. He's the founder of National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, which just happens to be the largest writing event in the world. Not surprisingly, Chris also holds the NaNoWriMo record of most consecutive NaNoWriMos because he's participated every year since 1999. So if my math is right, that's 20 novels. If there's a writing hall of fame in this world, Chris deserves to be honored for that statistic alone. But beyond that, Chris is also the author of two of the best NaNo prep books in the world. The classic No Plot, No Problem, which I often refer to as the Bible of NaNoWriMo. It's a great read, especially for anyone who's never done NaNoWriMo before. And he's the co-author of Ready, Set, Novel, a novel writing workbook that has a lot of fun exercises in it. And let's just jump right in with questions for Chris. Chris, as the record holder for NaNoWriMo participation, are you planning to write a novel this November?
Yes, it is in my bloodstream and DNA now. I fear that I will continue to write novels for the rest of my life in November. I think it's like a Pavlovian response now. As soon as the leaves start turning, I immediately start typing.
That's good to hear, because I don't know what I would say to you to encourage you to participate if you weren't. I don't know what techniques I would use. But have you decided on an idea yet, or when do you usually get your idea for your NaNoWriMo novel?
So I haven't decided yet, and I think it kind of depends on just fortune, maybe the amount of coffee I've been drinking when that idea hits. Sometimes it's been months beforehand, which has been great, and then I've had time to kind of develop a sort of secondary cast and think about what's the central problem and what will be the arc of the story. A far more frequent occurrence is that about a week before November starts, I desperately grab for whatever low-hanging fruit is in either my head or somebody near me's head and just sort of run with that.
Good. People can still, they can still participate in NaNoWriMo up until the last day or even during November, right? If they get an idea.
Yeah. Some of the best NaNoWriMo stories I've heard have been people who, you know, days into the event just thought, all right, I know I'm starting late, but I'm going to give it a try. And I actually think starting late helped them kind of lower that quality bar, that sense of that kind of inner critic, because they were like, hey, I'm starting late. This is going to be terrible. That's okay. And they've ended up finding amazing stories and winning NaNoWriMo and going on to kind of this this level of fame that will last a lifetime.
That's great. It's inspiring, I think. So, Chris, a lot of people are new to NaNoWriMo, or who are new might not know its origin story. So could you tell us the story of that first NaNoWriMo and how you got the wild idea to write a novel in a month in the first place and how you set about doing it way back then?
Yes. So this was back in 1999. And I think I had always been a book lover, but had always been kind of terrified at the idea of ever trying to write one. And so when I was 26, I had a good group of friends who were kind of up for anything. And so I sent out an email that was like, hey, what if we dedicated July? And that was the first year was in July. To all of us writing crappy first drafts of books. And it's okay if they're terrible, and we'll just get together and we'll make this like a group undertaking. And, you know, thankfully, I had a group of friends who said, like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And so we, the first year, there were just 21 participants, most of us living in the Bay Area. And we would like get together in coffee shops in Berkeley and write after work. And, you know, I think that secretly some of us were hoping that the books would actually be like amazing diamonds in the rough. And in fact, the books that we wrote were all terrible to a T, were all bad, but the experience was so much fun. And it felt like even though they were bad books, like the fact that we had written, they kind of found this world and this group of people and they had sort of come to life, I think to me was, it just felt wonderful. And I was like, I want to keep doing this. And so the next year I put up a website and invited more people, and it just kind of snowballed from 21 to 140, then to 5,000 to 14,000 and all the way up to kind of where we are now.
You know what? I always find it so interesting, Chris, because like you weren't planning to launch a, you know, a creative phenomena or revolution or a nonprofit in 1999. And yet everything you did during that first month of writing, we're doing in some variation now, right? Like we emphasize writing with a community and writing with other people and collaborating and making writing playful and not worrying about a terrible first draft. And so I think it's fascinating, like how you just did it, you know, and it blossomed into what we have now.
Right. I mean, I am a person who is full of terrible ideas, and I never would have guessed that the let's all get together and write a bad novel in a month idea would be the one that actually would end up having legs and being something that, you know, here, whatever, 19 years later, you know, I'm still loving. And it's amazing. I think it's a testament to the fact that, like, just so many people have this hunger to kind of like build these worlds and kind of explore their imagination. And ultimately, you know, there's so many people who love reading books that I think once they give themselves permission to write one, just find out like how much joy there is in that process. And I think especially if you can make it kind of this, a group undertaking where, you know, there are 300,000 other people going through the kind of ups and downs of this creative challenge, I really do feel like it unleashes something in us that otherwise might lay dormant.
Well, with the community spirit that you mentioned in mind, we crowdsourced some nano prep questions on Facebook. And this one comes from Samantha German. She says, everyone has their own way of prepping, but are there any essential steps that can't be skipped? I think Samantha's looking to skip perhaps some steps.
I would say, good. I like that spirit. Let's skip some steps. I think the one thing I would say is for 99% of the people that do this, you will hit some tough spots and you will start to realize rightly that this thing is a mess and that you will not be achieving that like beautiful city on the hill vision of like bashing out a first draft that somehow just needs a few typo corrections and you're going to be able to send it out. And I think like, to me, the one step you can't skip is just a conversation with yourself around the idea that this is a first draft, that this is a rough draft, that every book you've ever loved started out as this deeply imperfect collection of characters and kind of half-baked plot notions and some things that started out promising and didn't go anywhere. And I think if you can just kind of accept that right off the bat, that every book has to start as this really kind of unbeautiful thing. And that, but that's how beautiful books get written, is you write this first draft and then you revise it in a second draft or a third draft, a fourth draft. And by the end of that process of revision, like that beautiful thing does exist, but that, and you have to start with the rough draft. Like you can't skip that step. So that I think would be my advice to Samantha, is just knowing that it's going to be ugly, but that is the path to beauty.
Yeah, I think that's the brilliance of NaNoWriMo right there, actually. And well, here's another one, because we got a few questions for you specifically. And Trixie Cruz asked, how can you know your ideas are strong enough to support a novel? So what's your advice on novel selection? Well, given what you said at the outset, you have great advice on that.
Well, so one of the questions I get a lot, so I teach a class through continuing studies at Stanford that's basically a National Novel Writing Month class. And I think a lot of people come to class with two ideas, and their question is, which is the right idea? Because I think a lot of times we, you know, by the time we sit down to write, we're like, oh, there was that kind of the book that's maybe about my family story. And then there's that kind of like crazy science fiction book I've wanted to write. And kind of like we sort of have this feeling like, oh, one of these paths is the right way. To me, I think it's the book that you would most like to read is, if you're picking from different options, is the right one to write. Like, what is the one that you would like, you would grab at the bookstore and throw down on the counter and buy right away if you read a blurb about it on the back? So I think following like your passion as a reader is a really kind of great compass as you think about whether an idea is like worth following. But I think barring that, like even if you have no ideas that you would ever approach in a bookstore, I do think that like just taking an idea and exploring it is so worthwhile. And that's kind of the beauty of this being a 30-day challenge, is that if at the end of the month you feel like, wow, yep, it seemed like it was not a good idea, and at the end of it, I found out it was not a good idea and I don't want to go back to this book, I still think that's a great use of 30 days. And really, it was only a month of your time. And I think along that journey, you probably will have discovered some characters or some scenes that can kind of be the heart of another story or another novel.
Yeah, I sometimes think of NaNoWriMo, it's almost like a novel idea vetting event. Because I do the same thing. I test a novel idea, and it's a beautiful test because it's only 30 days. And if it's calling me, I might spend a couple more years on it. But if it's not calling me, it's gone, and I did it, and that's wonderful.
Right. And I, you know, some people also end up writing a book that they love that they have no interest in like going through years of revision. That alone was just, that was why they did it. They just wanted to kind of spend some time exploring their imagination, and they did it. And I think that's also great. I think a lot of times people kind of put this pressure on themselves about like, well, this needs to be the path towards the bestseller list or something. But I think other people kind of do NaNoWriMo in the same way they might run a marathon, where really the only thing that matters is that they finished it, that they had a meaningful experience along the way. They got some free Gatorade, whatever it was. I think that there are a lot of reasons to write a novel. And I think finishing, editing, and publishing is only one of the different very worthy paths.
Absolutely. I so admire those writers who are just writing for the sake of writing, because I think we should all do that with our creativity more in life. Well, I want to ask you one more question, because Trixie asked several questions, and I think you're one of the experts in the world on this. Do you have any tips against procrastination? And I know that you maybe even have an advanced degree in procrastination.
I do. I have a postdoctorate studies that I'm engaging in still in procrastination. I think to me, this is where finding like a writing buddy is hugely helpful. If you can find one person, they don't have to live in your town. They can be like somebody that you lives across the country, around the world, but that somebody that agrees to do this as well. And that you can kind of check in with each other on a daily basis, you know, see each other's word counts on the NaNoWriMo site, kind of know if somebody skipped a day when they shouldn't. I think just knowing that there's somebody else out there that is connected to this, that's also going through it, but that you also can have like a healthy amount of competition with, I think is really helpful to turn, like keep that procrastination at bay. Like I know a lot of families do this together, and I know, you know, that is like a beautiful thing because you never want to let your like son beat you, or you never want to have that the sister win. So I think that this is, to me, it's in the same way that I think if you are like trying to do more exercise or play sports more, like you kind of join a team that's doing that, or you have kind of like a running buddy or something. I think having a writing buddy will help you stay writing when the writing gets tough.
I love this family-oriented competition. I'm going to face down my kids this November.
Well, you write as a family, don't you, Grant? Haven't you issued SmackDown challenges to your own children?
Definitely. They're never going to beat me. It's just, you know, my ego is too big to allow them, even though my son is now taller than me. But on the subject of time management, I you know, for me, actually, when we talk about nano prep, and a lot of people think about outlining and researching and all that kind of stuff, but if I'm going to be successful during NaNoWriMo, for me, it's really about time management, making the time to write. And that's a kind of, it's easier said than done. And I know that you, this will be, I think, your fourth NaNoWriMo as a working parent.
Yes.
Which is super challenging. So I'm just curious, what's the time management strategy you're going to use this month?
Yeah, I think the one, so I really encourage people to kind of figure out where their sort of like most creative window is. I think for me, it's like right after the third cup of coffee hits in the morning. And, but for other people, they tend to be night owl writers. I think some people actually work best in the late afternoon. I've never met one of those people. I know they exist. But I think that the art of time management, I think you're right that novel writing to me is as much a process of project management as it is a creative endeavor. I think those two go very closely hand in hand. But I would say when you think about making time to write, try to make that time coincide as much as possible with your most creative window. And everybody kind of has that. So I think to me, the morning time is my best time. And so what I'm going to try to do is probably just get up a little bit early and write then when I can. But the other thing around, you know, I think 1,667 words, if you leave it all to one session, I think can be a little daunting, especially if you fall behind during NaNoWriMo. And then it's like, oh, I have 3,000 words to write or 4,000. And that's where I think breaking your writing sessions up into like smaller sessions is a really great idea. So if you can just do 500 words before you go to work, and then on your lunch break, maybe you do another 300 words. And then in the evening, you just have less to do. So it's you're kind of taking it in small bites rather than trying to devour it all in one meal.
So you've clearly learned a lot. I mean, you have all these strategies, and I'm assuming over the years you've developed ideas and things that work and don't work. But after all these years of doing NaNo, do you still have pangs of self-doubt as a writer?
I think I leave all of those pangs, and I do have many of them, for the revision process. I think I've just now seen like the first, I just, my expectations for myself on a quality level for the first draft are so remarkably low that I don't quite have that like sense of like, oh, is this good enough? Because I love that it's bad and I want it to be bad. And, yeah, but definitely when it comes to revision, like when the month ends, I just feel like my inner critic that I was able to put in the kennel for those 30 days comes back with teeth.
Right. But at least you have a way to contain it during November, which is kind of maybe the point.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes practice, too. Doing NaNoWriMo every year is a good, good exercise to banish your inner editor. I have another kind of NaNoWriMo, I guess, obstacle that I think is famous in NaNoWriMo lore. And it's the muddy middle, as I call it. It's week two of NaNoWriMo. After that burst of joy that you've experienced during week one kind of expires or exhausts itself. And I think it's really tough to give writers advice about how to get beyond that week two and keep going. That's where we lose most of our writers. So do you have any good tips for people when they hit that wall?
I hit it all. Yeah. I think week two, sometimes it happens then, sometimes week three. I think to me, the key in that moment is to start making big decisions, because really that's when you're hitting that wall. It's often that you had this kind of exposition for your book. Your characters were meeting each other. They didn't really need to do anything. And so the tough decisions around, like, what is this book about? What is going to be the turning point? What's going to kick off this adventure? What's the opportunity or problem? I think you can kind of put off that decision. And I think, unfortunately, like, right around week two is when you have to both start, you have to figure out what are these characters going to do for the rest of the book? And at the same time, you're probably a little sleep deprived. The dishes are stacking up in your sink. All the people that were super into this, like your support network and cheerleaders, have gotten bored and moved on to other things like Netflix series. And so you're kind of alone and needing to make really tough creative calls. And I think to me, it's just like going ahead and committing to making decisions. I think decisions, there's this great quote in Creativity Inc. from the Pixar president or CEO, where he talks about decisions being kind of like lights. And once you make a decision, you're able to see a part of this world that you just wouldn't have seen if you sort of put that off and kind of just let the characters mill around for a little while longer. So I think just boldly making decisions that may not feel like the right ones, but you can always, whatever happens, you'll be able to see a little more. Maybe you'll decide to back up and try a different path. But really just like, you know, going ahead and committing to saying, okay, this is, they are going to go into this tiki bar, and the tiki bar is going to burn down. And that is going to be the kickoff to this great novel. I'm giving the burning tiki bar away for free, by the way.
I'm writing this down right now.
Brooke, that's yours. I'm giving it to Brooke.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I've got it. Well, and Chris, so we're going to let you go here in a minute, but as the person who has done the most NaNoWriMo challenges ever on the planet, what is your approach? Because it's October, we're doing this NaNo prep series on the podcast, and has your approach to NaNo changed over the years? I mean, you've spoken to it a little bit just in terms of the low-hanging fruit, but advice to the listeners out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think just going into the approach, I think it's understandable that you're kind of feeling nervous. And again, I think to me, this comes back to this idea of really letting this feel like play. You know, there are so many things that we do in our lives to help other people. I think we are oftentimes focused on helping, you know, coworkers and bosses achieve their goals. And, if we have families, we're helping our families as well to kind of like get through the day. But I really see this as like, this is your time and you deserve this creative time. And as kids, we spend all of our time in this kind of imaginative play. You know, my son just loves Batman and has infinitely long conversations with Batman and an octopus, or today it was Batman and a witch. And he'll just like happily live in these worlds because it just is so sustaining and satisfying. And I think as adults, we still have that impulse and that instinct and that need. And I think in our day-to-day lives, we often don't give it time. So I would just say, like, know that this is like your time to explore and experiment and really kind of just try big ideas and see where they go. And, to me, that's kind of the spirit that I just try to go into NaNoWriMo and know that, like, whatever book that you're working on, like, there is somebody out there who has been waiting so long to read that book, and that these things that seem kind of like ill-conceived or half-baked, ultimately, if you just start writing and keep writing, they will get better. And that's kind of the flag that I tend to write under, is that kind of hopeful flag that this miserably terrible dispiriting thing will over time and even over 30 days become so much more.
Yeah. I love that, Chris, because I think NaNoWriMo is the most playful and whimsical writing organization in the world. And I think that's part of the secret to its success. So it's always good to remind ourselves of that. Final question. You've heard so many stories from NaNoWriMo writers over the years. Do you have a favorite inspiring story you could share with people to close?
That's a great question. God, yeah. I mean, I think to me, it is oftentimes the stories that I hear that I think are the most moving are the ones that aren't really about books. It's about people who tackled this challenge and succeeded, and it gave them confidence to start asking other questions. So, you know, one of the great things that I often hear is that, you know, doing NaNoWriMo, helped me start taking violin lessons again. It gave me the confidence to start that business that I've been wanting to do for a long time. I think for some people, it's this catalyst that moves beyond that and into relationships, where I was talking to one woman who had been in a really tough relationship. It sounds like she got no support and was, you know, it just sounded like a very trying situation. I think her husband at the time had said, "You'll never do this. You're not a writer." And she did it. And that was the start of her, I think, really looking at herself and saying, I do have something in me. I have these abilities. I am worthwhile. And so I met her in Colorado and she told me this whole story. And now she's happily single. She's working on her novels. Her life just seems so much better. And I think that really what it is just giving yourself the chance to believe in who you are and what you can do. And from there, really miracles will happen.
Perfectly said, Chris. We receive so many testimonials from people. And just as you say, it's not necessarily about their novel. It's about how doing this huge, huge endeavor has changed their perception of themselves and their capabilities. So thank you so much for starting this creative revolution. Thank you so much for joining us on Right Minded. I wish you luck with your Burning Tiki Bar novels writing series.
Hey, that's mine.
Come on.
I'm on it.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on the show. And good luck to everybody out there. You can do it. And the world really does need your novel.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, we're kicking off a month of NanoPrep actions, and this is the first one. So we do a lot of word sprints during NaNoWriMo to help people keep banging out the words on the page and moving forward. I think word sprints can also be useful in planning your novel and preparing to write. And so I recommend that you do, let's say, a week of NanoPrep word sprints. And here's how you could do it. You could take your main character, for example, and spend 10 minutes. Just set a timer for 10 minutes and write as quickly as you can about him or her. Don't worry about punctuation or logic. Just try to keep your pen on the page or your fingers on the keyboard. And do this every day, perhaps for a different character every day, perhaps for your novel setting, anything related to your novel. Just experience that kind of burst of writing and get used to not holding yourself to, you know, a perfect standard of writing, to banish your inner editor. And I offer this exercise because I don't think planning a novel has to be an onerous task. I think sometimes it feels like that, or it can feel like that, depending on your expectations. I don't think planning a novel has to take the shape of an outline. I think it's mainly just about getting in the creative mindset to do it. And so I hope this exercise will help people get there.
All right, everybody, good luck with Nano Prep, and November's on the horizon. Remember that Right Minded is a weekly podcast, and this whole month we're going to be doing Nano Prep, and we're excited about that and getting you all ready. Please download our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, especially as we're new and trying to get this thing launched off the ground, we super appreciate if you can give us some stars, rate us, let us know what you think, and we'll see you next week.